thanks for listening today in the middle of the day in the middle of America. And thanks for following me on Twitter at Paul Harris Show and on my website, harrisonline.com. My next two guests are here to present a new grand strategy for America. It has to do with restoring our prosperity and security and sustainability for the 21st century. They are two of the three authors of a book with that title, The New Grand Strategy. One of them is an old friend of mine who happens to be the executive editor of the Green Biz Group and an award-winning author on his own, and has just come back from Hawaii and probably has a heck of a tan, Joel McCower. Hi, Joel. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Great to hear your voice.
Nice to talk to you again. And also joining me now is Mark Huck Mickleby, who's a retired Marine colonel and co-director of the Strategic Innovation Lab at Case Western Reserve University. And Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Can I call you Puck? Mark, can I call you Puck?
Please do.
Okay.
Please do. Thank you.
This all started with you at the Pentagon back in 2009, right?
Well, it wasn't all me, but I was there, yeah, along with Navy Captain Wayne Porter, working for Admiral Mullen when he was Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
And what did he task you with 7 years ago?
He basically sat us down in July of 2009 and told us to figure out a new grand strategy for the nation. And when we say grand strategy, we're not talking about a military strategy or just a national security strategy. We're talking about a comprehensive, all-inclusive strategy and what direction this country is going to take in the 21st century. So it was interesting tasking coming from the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but it was, it still is, I would say, a desperately needed task that, quite frankly, our government right now just doesn't seem to have the capacity to get its collective brains around or its arms around.
And Joel, those words in your title, prosperity, security, and sustainability, are tied together in your book in a way that I don't hear a lot of people talking about.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the idea here is that, first of all, leveraging this thing that America has done at critical times in its history called grand strategy, dusting that off, because we haven't really had a new grand strategy since they lowered the hammer and sickle for the last time on the Kremlin on Christmas Day 1991. By leveraging our economy and aligning it with our foreign policy the way we've done to address big challenges, we can tackle some of the big challenges of the day in aligning prosperity, security, and sustainability. But what's really interesting, Paul, is that this book, certainly for me, and I know for a lot of people who've read it, helped define or redefine, I guess, what does it mean to be prosperous? What does it mean to be secure? And what does it mean to be sustainable? Because we have ideas about those three things that largely have, you know, prosperity is about money, security is about, you know, ISIS and a few other things, and sustainability is about greeny environmental kind of stuff. And that's not the case at all. And how we align those actually addresses so many of the goals that we as Americans, left or right or middle, need to be tackling.
Okay, so, Puck, I got to go back to 2009. You and Porter come up with this at Admiral Mullen's behest, and you write out your grand strategy, and here we are in 2016, and it hasn't been implemented yet. What's going on?
Yeah, it was interesting, and I'm not sure specifically what Admiral Mullen was looking for, but what Wayne and I recognized when we got our tasking in July of 2009 was that America didn't really need a new strategy coming out of Washington. That's why we ended up writing a paper called The National Strategic Narrative. And we put sustainability, we discovered sustainability more or less of an organizing logic. Not, as Joel said, didn't take a look at it from an environmental perspective. What we looked at it was, you know, what is required? I mean, what's the organizing logic required for this country to thrive in the 21st century, not just survive it? And how do we address our enduring interests of prosperity and security? And that's what makes sustainability so powerful, because we looked at it from a scientific perspective. You know, as the definition, organisms' ability to remain diverse and productive over time, sustainability really was a way that we could converge foreign and domestic policy. Now, why didn't it take off? It was because we were uniform officers working for the most senior officer in the United States military. And in order for us to actually put together a strategic framework, a no-kidding strategy, we were going to have to dabble in domestic policy, and we just don't want our military doing that. That's not our job. I mean, we have this great thing called the Constitution, and the military is subservient to our civilian leadership. So what we were trying to do was just create a concept, a strategic construct in the form of sustainability, and with the intention of creating a conversation and hopefully a grand strategic effort within all the government to take this thing on. And like I said before, we just kind of lost that muscle memory for doing grand strategy in Washington, D.C., and that's why when I retired in August 2011, really set the sights on the private sector to be that change agent, that catalyst for a new, to catalyze a new grand strategy, particularly one of sustainability in the 21st century.
So, Joel, in a nation where we have a congressional logjam and politicians who make promises that they can never keep and don't intend to talk to the other side about what compromise is going to be, do we need Washington to take the lead, or should business lead the way?
You make it sound like a bad thing. This is very much not about waiting on Washington to solve our problems. And I think that's sort of the really interesting part of this book, being published this year in the middle of this crazy, crazy election, that isn't really focusing on the big issues that address us. This is about a plan, born at the Pentagon, in which, but carried out by the private sector, in terms of, again, using our economy to do the heavy lifting to help us restore prosperity, security, and sustainability. What I really love about this, Paul, and this is, I was not looking to write another book. As you well know, I've written a lot, and I have plenty of other things to do with my day job. But what grabbed me, what seized me by the neck on this is that this is kind of the best of the left and right. It's a very, sort of progressive agenda, but it's very conservatively done in terms of by business, for profit, without Washington's money, although it would be nice if there was some leadership, but it's not necessary. The other thing I think that's really important is how this book came together. Puck and I came from opposite sides of the world in many respects. He's from a conservative upbringing in rural Minnesota. I grew up in liberal Oakland. He went to the Naval Academy. I went to Berkeley. He ended up as a fighter pilot over Bosnia and Iraq. I ended up writing about sustainability. And yet we came to the exact same place in terms of understanding why sustainability needs to be the organizing logic for America's economy. And if we can do that, it just really gave me hope that we don't need Washington to lead on this, that we can all do this as citizens.
And Puck, it's not just about America. As I read the book, I keep hearing phrases like global unsustainability. Are other countries doing anything in this regard? Are they better at it than we are, or do we have to drag them along with America?
Well, I mean, some are doing better, some are doing worse. But the issue isn't whether who's better or doing worse. It's the issue, these are our common interests. Where we're going as a human species, I mean, right now it takes 1.5 planets worth of resources to support the human species. By the middle of the century, it could be 4.5 planets. I mean, that's kind of a common interest for all of us. And that's the interesting point. Yes, this is an American grand strategy. I still believe, given that we have roughly about 25% of the global economy, we still have the weight to be able to shift the direction, the global trajectory. But we're not going to get there by talking about it, about what other people ought to be doing. We're talking about what Russia ought to be doing, or what China ought to be doing, or India. We're going to get there by demonstrating, by leading by example. This is the point of our grand strategy. We will get our act together. We will not only by what we do, but just in the actual physical space of having an economy and shifting our economy towards things like regenerative agriculture, things like renewable energy, things like a resource productivity, radically reducing how much stuff it takes just to run our economy, and still provide that great middle class lifestyle. That is the kind of leadership that the world expects out of America. And that's how we start impacting the global world, or the other peoples around the world. So instead of getting a sweaty lip over, China playing around in the Spratleys, we could start engaging them with their big vexing problems that they have in terms of having to put, you know, millions and millions of people, about 292 million people in the middle of the century into the urban environment. They don't have the water, they don't have the materials, they don't have the food, they don't have the energy to do it. That is the place that we can engage China in a whole different framework around converging interests rather than conflicting interests. That's where this thing transcends from just being about America or just being about our economy, and it takes on this new framework for foreign policy, the new way to engage the world, and actually shift the trajectory of the global conditions.
Joel, you and I have talked many times over the last quarter century or more about companies that get ahead of their competition and also help themselves by eliminating waste, including stories you've told me about Anheuser-Busch right here in St. Louis. And there's a great story on page 140 of your book, The New Grand Strategy, about Subaru and a factory that they have in Lafayette, Indiana, where they have eliminated waste. They have a zero waste facility. Not the only company doing that in America, but talk a little bit about what they're doing and how they're doing it and how it's important, A, to us, and B, to them.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, and it's emblematic of what's going on, not just in the auto industry, but in industry overall. And it goes to resource productivity, which is one of the three big pools of demand that we say in the book, that if American industry taps into that in a big way, it goes a long way towards helping us build our prosperity, security, and sustainability. Yeah, Subaru and General Motors and so many other plants around the country have gone to zero waste, and it sounds like a big deal, but it's not in a certain way. They've got 4,000 employees working their 4 million square foot facility, 10 miles of production lines, and so they've been zero waste for 12 years since 2004. They got the scrap metal from the stamping shop collected, sent off to become smaller car parts, and the overspray from the paint shop collected and turned into barricades for highways, things like that. GM, more than 120 of their facilities around the world have achieved zero waste, and it's not even just the car companies. It's, I talked about Nestle's North American factories, Lazy Boy factory in Dayton, Tennessee, and so on. This is one of the ways that we, make America competitive, rebuild our industrial base, make our communities more resilient. It sounds like it's just a good corporate practice, which, by the way, it is. But it can go a long way towards addressing the strategy that we talk about in the book.
And that seems like it goes right towards what you were talking about, where business leads the way if we're going to get to more global sustainability. Even if these companies are doing it because it helps their own bottom line, that's okay if it gets us to that goal, right?
It's not only okay, it's necessary. I mean, if it's not, I have no problem with, companies doing things because it makes money. Oh, and by the way, it's good for the environment. That's the way it should be, good for the environment, good for communities, and good for America overall. That's what it should be that way. They should all line up, and done well, it can. And I think that's what's great about this is that we show in the book a pathway. Not just car companies, not just zero waste, but through lots of ways where the business community can take the lead, show the way in meeting this grand strategy.
Puck, one of the things that I know people in this bi-state area will be interested in your book is that you foresee a population shift back to us here in the Midwest, don't you?
Absolutely. It always comes up the issue of climate change and sea level rise. And everyone likes to point to the fact that the military has been planning for this type of stuff for a long time. We've been planning for it overseas, but we have planned it for it here at home. And so where do you think people are going to go? Right now, we've got about 25 million people, at least in the southeast, living within 4 feet of a high water mark. They're going to have to go somewhere. So the demographic shifts in the United States are going to start going back toward the heartland because that's where the arable soil is, fresh water. These are all just basic, from a military guy's perspective, we just deal with facts. We deal with things in a pragmatic problem-solving way. You can never wish away an enemy capability. Well, right now, given climate change, that's kind of like the big enemy that's out there. So how are we going to plan for it? So we really need to start investing in new transportation systems, new energy systems, ag systems, and how we design and build out our built environments. That is really the strategic future of this country, and we have to start preparing for it now, because by the middle of the century, it's going to be our reality. It's no longer going to be something that we're planning to. It's something that we're always going to be reacting to. And that's not where we want to be, in a position of forced choice. We want to be in a position of free choice and start making smart decisions where we can make a buck in doing things the American way, in an opportunities-based way, not in this kind of this election cycle or every election cycle, this manic focus on threat and risk. We can proactively do this and design things out and do it in a way that America always has done it, in a way that's opportunity-centric.
But here's the downside to listening to you guys and your new grand strategy. It's going to ruin my plan to have beachfront property in Missouri when climate change really kicks in.
Well, I live in Beaufort, South Carolina, so my but I'm originally a Minnesota boy, so I'm kind of, you know, if there is a silver lining, maybe the water will freeze over down here. We can play pond hockey down in South Carolina, but that's not necessarily that's not the direction we want to go. Maybe there's something else we can do, because really, I mean, this is about, you know, our kids and our grandkids, and I don't want to get, you know, pull on the emotional heartstrings, but I believe this. I swore an oath to this piece of paper, you know, for the majority of my adult life. But the Constitution, I mean, the very first words in the preamble are, "We the people of the United States." It's not waiting on Washington. I mean, this is on us as citizens of this republic. And that's what we have to get our brains around. And that's what de Tocqueville marveled about when he wrote Democracy in America, was that Americans just get it on. They don't wait for someone to tell them what to do. They figure it out. And this is, you know, what we lay out in our book, this grand strategy. It is a citizen's approach to shaping out the future for our kids and our grandkids.
The book is called The New Grand Strategy, Restoring America's Prosperity, Security, and Sustainability in the 21st Century. Joel McCower is an award-winning author and chairman and executive editor of the Green Biz Group. And Mark Mickleby is a retired Marine colonel. I learned a long time ago, Mark, never to say ex-Marine. Just say
got that right.
Retired Marine colonel and co-director of the Strategic Innovation Lab at Case Western Reserve University. Guys, congratulations on the work, and thanks for joining me here today.
Paul, it's always a pleasure.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.